Yeah, so as Judy explained, I work on the Maternal and Child Survival Program funded by USAID and work specifically with the Community Health and Civil Society Engagement Team. And what I'll bring to this panel presentation is a perspective of how core group, from the perspective of what a flagship partner of USAID, is contributing to USAID's goals and objectives. And I'd like to begin by just sort of highlighting the historic event that happened in June of 2012 when the governments of Ethiopia, India, the United States, and in partnership with UNICEF came together to galvanize commitments to end preventable child and maternal deaths. And this was a very ambitious goal and one that would definitely require the partnership of many, both governments and civil society. In June of 2014, there was a revisiting of that commitment, and USAID published its action plan titled Acting on the Call. So it's how it's laying out it's the plan for going forward to achieve this ambitious goal. USAID has also been making significant commitments in terms of the programs that it's been funding. The Maternal Child Health Integrated Program was a project from 2008 to 2014. And in fact, there are some associate awards that are continuing in certain countries, and put $600 million behind that commitment. The Maternal and Child Survival Program is, in essence, a follow-on to that, with some unique differences, but USAID has committed $500 million to the efforts of the Maternal and Child Survival Program. Just a few notable things about what is unique to the Maternal and Child Survival Program, especially thinking about our interest here in civil society, is a greater emphasis on community health and civil society engagement, and a commitment that 20% of the program's funding is to be spent through local institutions and organizations. And the petals of this flower illustrate the different technical areas that the Maternal and Child Survival Program has expertise in and is working in, but also there are many cross-cutting areas in which it's working as well, and community health and civil society engagement is part of that. So MCSP is scaling up reproductive, maternal, newborn, and child health coverage in 24 priority countries, and to do that is emphasizing ways to maximize the potential for public and private sector engagement, so that includes civil society. It's addressing equity through a community health strengthening approach, and it's strengthening institutionalization of community health by supporting integrated community health platforms. This is a visual that we use to illustrate or to help conceptualize integrated community health platforms. We don't intend it to be a blueprint, but we've created different lenses to look at the different elements that go into supporting community health. We're interested in more than just a standalone community health intervention for a particular area, but how the range of interventions for maternal and child health can be supported at the community level. And so the top lens is looking specifically at that intervention package, then moving to the right, we focus on the community health worker workforce and community infrastructure. This is a place where core group and civil society partners play a very important role. We also look at information for equity, learning, and adaptation, and the institutionalization, coordination, and partnerships that are essential to making community health something that isn't just project by project, but something that is really part of the fabric of the countries where we're working. So why community health and civil society? Why this heightened attention under the Maternal and Child Survival Program? Well, first of all, we know that, health really happens in the home. I think this picture of this woman breastfeeding her baby is an example of, the kind of activity that doesn't require great medical intervention, but it contributes. Exclusive breastfeeding contributes significantly to saving the lives of children. There is plenty of evidence showing that community-based primary health care is cost-effective, and the World Health Organization recently took a look at the countries that are on the fast track to achieving their Millennium Development Goals, and in addition to noticing that many of those countries are ones that have made considerable commitments to strengthening their community health work, in the study they also identified that a common factor was that of having strategies to mobilize partners across society. Even President Obama has noted the importance of civil society and charged the U.S. government entities to collaborate more and deepen ties with civil society in the countries where the U.S. government is engaged. Quote, "Through civil society, citizens hold their leaders accountable and address challenges that governments cannot tackle alone. Civil society organizations often drive innovations and develop new ideas and approaches to solve social, economic, and political problems that governments can't do on their own." So in working with civil society, there are many positive aspects. You're able to tap into the diverse actors with multiple channels to influence health priorities and practices, many of them reaching to the household level. However, there are also challenges in organizing and building capacity of such a diverse of such diversity, both in the multiplicity of organizations and the unique cultures and strengths that each of them have as well. And I'm speaking not only of international organizations, but especially like the plethora of local organizations that exist. So the core group plays an important role here in the way that it generates collaboration. And a lot of this has already been touched on by by my colleagues in the panel before me. And certainly they play an important role in convening partners together, both its members within the United States and also in the organization and reaching through the networks of its members in countries. Under MCHIP, CORE's role was focusing on the project's strategic objective 3, which was specifically around supporting NGO grantees of the USAID Child Survival and Health Grants Program and the President's Malaria Initiative. Under MCHIP, CORE contributed to many resources and tools that were used both by the grantees and other partners. So a few of these include the Community Case Management Essentials Program Guide for program managers. And there's also a flip book here called Taking Care of Baby at Home After Birth, What Families Need to Do. So a tool that's used by organizations on the ground to help to counsel at the family level, you know, essential newborn care activities. The core group also contributed to updates to a number of technical reference materials in family planning, malaria, maternal and newborn care, and also to tools for monitoring and evaluation, specifically the knowledge, practice, and coverage survey modules, which are used by child survival grantees, and both for child survival grants and in other programs. As these different modules have been updated, core group working groups have been helping to review the indicators and provide other feedback on the tools. So care groups, which have been mentioned several times already in the course of this panel, are a particularly good example of the way that learning and best practices are shared in CORE. The approach was first used by World Relief in a child survival grant in Mozambique that began in 1995. And as results were generated from that from that and other projects implemented by World Relief, there was interest to be, first, the results were shared at core group meetings, and later then CORE invested in a diffusion of innovation grant to help World Relief to develop a manual on care groups, and also to do some data collection to do an independent analysis of, to do a pregnancy history looking at the mortality. And as the evidence base was developed and the approach has spread to more and more organizations within CORE, it's been followed up by a policy manual that was mentioned by Jennifer Weiss, and also by a new manual that CORE Group has also played a role in developing, this one called A Training Manual for Program Design and Implementation. And that was done also in partnership with TOPS, which is a food security network. And so we see that the tools that are being developed within CORE, because CORE members are oftentimes working in multiple sectors, not just in health, that the capacity building that takes place within within CORE can even influence the work that's happening in other sectors. Under the Maternal and Child Survival Program, there are some new and expanded roles for CORE. It is continuing the dissemination of tools and information through its partners, but it's also leveraging country networks and CORE member reach. For example, there's country work that's under development right now in Haiti and Ethiopia, where as part of that plan, CORE is looks to be a really important partner in helping to organize civil society. In the case of Haiti, civil society organizations are not currently well networked, and the CORE group is likely to be playing a role to bring those partners together. And in Ethiopia, as has also been mentioned, the CORE Polio Secretariat will be able to be used to diffuse some of the newborn care materials for taking care of baby at home, and that will complement other activities that the MCSP program is doing through government channels. So CORE is continuing to build on and disseminate learning from the members' Child Survival and Health grants, and its expertise and member presence will be an important part of contributing to strengthening the community health platforms. So in summary, I think it goes without saying that the USAID's commitment and the U.S. government commitment to ending preventable child and maternal deaths is something that governments can't do alone. And if we're going to engage, civil society to take advantage of that reach, it's difficult to to go organization by organization. But the real strength of CORE is the collaborative nature of the forum and the network that it has created both in the U.S. and through its partners overseas, and it has an important role to play in achieving this goal. Thank you.
Thank you, Melanie. So we do have some time for questions or discussion, and we'd like to hear from you. Jean.
Well, Pal knows me. You know me. I worked with aid as a fellow that backed up the original Mozambique project for World Relief in 95 and saw the whole folding out over the next many years. So I have two questions. I don't expect you to have complete answers. One is more of the work that I'm doing now is articulating where this all fits in health system strengthening and why this is an essential role in health system strengthening, which involves factors that you have no control over, which are things like commodities management, the National Health Information System, and those things. So I don't expect you to answer that, but it's just kind of putting it down. And the other is, when I hear the presentation, and it's all wonderful, this is really good stuff, is the key role of advocacy, and Emmanuel, you were there in Rwanda. Rwanda would not have happened had you not been constantly going in at the table with the national government.
question started with referring to
system strengthening.
Well, no, but the yeah. project in Mozambique that did care groups, and then you referred to the manual. So are you talking about something that
what
something
are the care groups or really evolution? It was an evolution of processes. So you developed all of the approaches and the training and how to do it. But it would have existed in a vacuum had there not been a relationship, partnership with the national government and convincing them to allow. Because actually, what you did in Rwanda to begin with was not national policy. You had to get the national policy to allow you to do that. And to a certain extent, Mozambique was also the fact that there was a very close working relationship with the Ministry of Health there that allowed that to actually take place. So, but the word that I don't hear much about is the advocacy role that then allows these tools to be used.
I think a key thing, if I understand your question correctly, is national staff. Because, you know, for this program, there are two advocacy points. One was ICCM, and the other was care groups. And they both have the problem. The ICCM, it's easy to see why you would care, but it's also kind of controversial. And certainly Ethiopia's had that issue. What antibiotics to community health workers?
If it's controversial, and you've got strong resistance against doing what you're proposing to do.
Well, but in Rwanda, we also had strong advocates. But we also had strong national staff pushing for it. But it would be, I think, inaccurate to say that it was just us leading, because I'd actually proposed ICCM in Rwanda in 99, because I did it, you know, in 1988. So I saw firsthand how, like, it saves a lot of lives. But I was laughed out of the room. So, and it wasn't my mentioning the change thing. It was the fact that the government, you know, there was the Belgian cooperation organized a trip, and something happened at the senior level that made them want ICCM. And after that, it was much easier. But I think with care groups but our national staff did help, particularly for pneumonia treatment, which was a tougher thing. But care groups were interesting because it's not as controversial, but conversely, it can be hard. And yet, my observation had been that the ministry were very strong supporters of care groups. And I think a lot of that had to do with Millet. You know, so you had a national staff who's very strong, and who, it's interesting because, you know, in every place and country, there's the in-crowd politically and the non-in-crowd, and Millet certainly isn't in the in-crowd. But she sort of comes across as knowing what she's talking about. And so you have people who genuinely, so I mean, I noticed when we were putting together the project that the government was actually, you know, strongly supportive specifically of the care group element. So I think for all of this, it's important for it not to be people like Melody or Jennifer or myself flying in, but to have national staff who get it, who know a lot more than we do how to navigate the thicket, but who also have, and one of the great things that CARE was particularly good in doing that, is to bring national staff to the CARE group, to the core group meetings, because you can have a slogan like from core to CARE or something, but because then they get the whole exposure to other things, the understanding of other organizations and the wider exposure that CORE is so good at giving, but they're infinitely more effective. And I think certainly in that project, you know, having national staff navigate and convince their peers in the government was much more effective than anything we did.
Can I just add to that? Because there are two things. There's an article that will be coming out about six CORE organizations and how they worked with in countries to change policy so that these programs could be implemented.
Because that's
something we're working on getting the story out about. But as Emmanuel says, it's the people in country who make these things happen. It's not us. So we talked about relationships and the importance of relationships. Those have to happen in country too, and that's one of the reasons the secretariats are so successful, and I think that's one of the reasons we're trying to implement more of that in the new maternal and child survival program. So,
and in the program that Emmanuel was describing in Rwanda, I think that there was, in contrast to the prior individual projects that all three organizations had, I think that I observed that the weight that we had with the three organizations together as a consortium with the government was much stronger than otherwise. We were just, you know, those small individual NGO projects, but there was like a whole different level of being taken seriously by the government, by the Ministry of Health when we were working as a consortium.
And that's a leading question, because as you know, I'm very familiar with this project, and that there was that background is what I'm trying to say. The relationships that were built by the organization with the government made put the enabling environment in there, but the steps on how to, now ICPM, am I correct, is on the national policy, and care groups, are they now in the, they're not yet part of the national health system structure, and I'm more thinking of the future, how to institutionalize these things, and there's a lot that is important.
Maybe just a great follow-on from that. My question is about sustainability, and you know, so often in maternal child health, we just expect the government to take things on. But I wondered if you could talk about the sustainability of these care groups and whether it's just something we push to governments, or are we seeing these be sustainable in their own right? So there's a lot of talk about voluntary savings and loans groups as, you know, ways to keep the hook, to keep people coming to these care group kind of sessions. I'm just wondering if you've done any work in that area about sustainability.
Well, I can say a few things about that, and then I'll also turn it over to Jen to talk about some work in Burundi that Concern Worldwide has done. But so in terms of sustainability, some of the early work in Mozambique, because World Relief was continuing to work in the general area, albeit in different districts, they had the opportunity to go back after the project had ended at various points and do more household surveys and look to see that the behavior change was being sustained, and in the surveys where they asked about whether or not households had been visited by their care group volunteer, an overwhelming majority of the households were still, you know, interacting with their volunteer. That did not necessarily mean that the care groups themselves were meeting every 2 weeks. I mean, no one was providing them new lessons and things to learn. So there is certainly an element of sustainability in terms of the behavior change, and the extent to which the groups continue to meet, I think, has been somewhat variable there. I think that an interesting potential for sustainability, or when you talk about turning things over to the government, is some operations research that Concern Worldwide did in Burundi, where they compared the direct implementation of care groups by NGO staff versus where Concern was building the capacity of the Ministry of Health to facilitate the care groups. And Jen can talk about what they found there.
Yeah, I mean, we were basically, care groups to date have been an NGO-led model. You know, program staff facilitate the groups and create the lessons and everything. And so we did a trial in Burundi to see, okay, well, we'll do that in part of our program, and then the other part we'll sort of build the capacity of the ministry to implement them at the health facility level, and then actually have CHWs, government-supported CHWs, run the groups. And we made a little bit of some tweaks to the model, but basically found the same outcomes. We measured about 40 knowledge and practice indicators and found that in 36 of them, they were, you know, performed just as well in the CHW-led area than in the NGO-led area. But I mean, I think for me the question around sustainability is twofold. I mean, first, are the outcomes being maintained? And especially when you're looking at behaviors of children under 5, you know, as time goes on, you're continuing to look at a different cohort of mothers. However, we know that, you know, as knowledge and practices improve among some, that people influence their neighbors, and I think it's very possible for improved outcomes to be sustained, even if the actual activity is not. Anyway, it's a whole debate for another day, but I think it's a fascinating question.
And can one other comment in terms of talking about the, you know, handing things over to the government. In the Rwanda project, actually, although the project started out doing care groups in certain areas, the government then, the Ministry of Health requested that the project not, given its emphasis on training thousands of its community health workers, it did not want the project to be creating a whole other throngs of other volunteers. And so the project did have to make some compromises in its strategy and made some modifications. So in the end, actually, what we were referring to the groups as CHW peer support groups rather than traditional care groups because, so we applied as many principles as possible from what we had learned about care group programming, but we applied those to the government recognized community health workers as a way to promote sustainability. And some of those modifications of organizing the CHWs in groups and some, you know, specific program design modifications there is what in Rwanda I think that we would hope might be applied in, would be, could be taken up nationally.
And if I can just add something, for the Madagascar program, we're, that's what we're trying to do now going forward in introducing the care group model, is being mindful of what are those sustainability factors. Is it including the CHVs or the TBAs and kind of tweaking, how do you make it something that's very locally grown and owned so that it can perpetuate? Because the mother that's having a brand new baby now, that might be her last baby, and she's not going to be the same mother in 5, 6, 7 years. So we're kind of trying to, again, with the core group, learning from the research that's been done from everything that's happened in the last, you know, 20 years since care groups have been around, and trying to build in some of these different factors. Because we know that community groups do last, because in some of our programs we've had, you know, maybe go back years later and they're still meeting with new people, and kind of it's part of their community way now. So we're, stay tuned, and in 5 years I'll tell you if it worked or not in Madagascar. But that's definitely something that we're looking at and trying to bring in the health system and the local structures.
Okay, we're just about at the end of our time, so I would like to thank all of you for coming, and to thank our presenters.